sounds was recorded on October the 1st, 1962, Sitter Rose Street, medium Lisbon, Flint.
Bless you, my child.
How old was this?
Please be up to you.
Thank you.
I listen with rapt attention.
Yes.
To our brother who spoke out to you.
Yes.
And indeed, he is most correct when he says unto you that always, through all your incarnations, you have lived in great houses. But what he fails to tell you, possibly he does not know, you were not always the mistress of the house. Sometimes, indeed, in one incarnation of which I have great remembrance, you held a very lonely place in
when
a great house.
Oh, yes. When I was a peasant or something.
Well, child, you were peasant stock.
Oh,
you were born a poor people in Assyria.
Oh, yes.
And you were, in that age and time, what you would call a slave. And you were indeed attached to a great house.
Yes.
And the master of that great house was he whom you refer to.
Yes.
As Lucilius.
As who?
Lucilius. Myself.
Really? Oh, how wonderful.
But this, of course, is another story of another age and another time. When you were a lonely maiden in the great house of the great Assyrian. When I say a great Assyrian, I would not have you think that I was great in spiritual things, but great in material things. And at this time and age of which I speak now was long before that incarnation of Roman time. It was an age which was in itself cruel and powerful in regard to the Assyrian race. And we were a warlike peoples, and I held great office and was closely attached to the court, and I had been myself a man of great affluence and power, and I was one who had led many armies into battles and had been highly decorated by he whom we call the King.
Who?
The King.
Yes.
And when I go back to this Assyrian time, I realize that it was a time in which I myself learnt very little. Indeed, possibly of all my incarnations, it was my least spiritual. I only mention it because of the interest it may have for you, for it has no credit to myself. But it was an early incarnation. The one in which I myself had not learned many of the lessons that were necessary. Another reason why, of course, like so many others, I returned to Earth again and again. And it was not until my Roman incarnation that I really began to perceive more fully the truth and the light of the Spirit. And as I think I have told you, in previous incarnations, there was a time when the illumination of the Spirit was strong in Atlantis.
Yes.
But we must remember that we are talking of an age many, many thousands upon thousands of years. And since that time, many changes have come among the peoples of the earth. And there has been this step backwards with many, and it has taken many centuries of time for man to recapture, at least some men to recapture, some aspects of the knowledge and the enlightenment of the truth that was known to the ancient Atlanteans. But then again, as I see back into the past, and I see you, and I see myself, and I see so many other souls running to us, I realize that all these various interludes in life on earth were so essential. We must not always think that any age or any time in which we had our being was a wasted time. When you think perhaps of a lifetime such as your own in this present incarnation, it may seem to you a long, wearying time. But in time itself, it is almost in a sense insignificant. In ancient Pompeii, you learnt certain facts. You were brought face to face with truth. And for a time, you pursued it. And then, for a time, for a considerable number of earthly years, you had little or no contact in regard to these things. And they did not necessarily lessen your spiritual unfoldment, for that which you had learned benefited you greatly and enabled you to continue in your work on earth for others. I've told you some of these things and how, after some time, after some discussion, it was decided it was wisest that you should not continue in the unfoldment and development of the gifts, the spiritual faculties, for which were beginning to become apparent and which were beginning to show some success. It is partly due to the fear within your brother, possibly more than anyone else, and to some extent myself, that this would not be beneficial to you, and the danger that would improve, that would possibly bring about difficulties, because there were many peoples of that time and age, especially in high places, who frowned on these things. Indeed, it was considered to be unlawful.
Yes.
In fact, there were laws in operation which made it a penalty of death to go into these things. There was a great fear of the supernatural, of the things which many felt were of the evil one. And that is why it was necessary to leave Rome and go to places such as Pompeii, where there was more freedom, where there were many cults, and where the law of Rome, though still operative, was not by any means so strong. In the house of the Betis, as I told you, there was a room set aside in which we held what you would term seances, in which Pharos, particularly, who was a medium, an instrument, used to go into what we term, or you term, trance states.
Yes.
And various spirits would manifest through him and would speak not only in the tongue of our day, but in the tongues of other days, other races. We would have many interesting experiments, and manifestations would sometimes appear. And of course, there came the time when you yourself started to go into these trance conditions, and your brother became particularly alarmed at this. He had no desire that you should be in any way used, and it was chiefly through his influence and his desire that you ceased to go further into this study.
Yes.
You had a house which was outside the city walls, and I've heard some discussion since that it might have been this house that has been recently, or fairly recently, rediscovered. I would like to clear this matter up and tell you that this is not the house. This house of which I speak has so far not been unearthed. But I have no doubt that at some later date it will be unearthed, and in that house should be discovered, because I should imagine it still exists, because there's no reason to think otherwise. There are not only paintings, and one painting of yourself, but also a bust, a head that was created and sculpted by a very clever artist and a Greek of his time who did many such things at Pompeii for many of the major houses. This house is outside the walls and should, I think, eventually be unearthed.
Oh, that would be very
interesting. And I do not want you to think it is this other house of which so much has been said and so much rather lends itself to the impression could be the house which once belonged to you. For this was an entirely different cult. Indeed, we knew of this cult. Indeed, we knew of the owner of this house. And on various occasions we visited this house and we had many discussions. But this house, or rather than that which transpired in this house, in regard to the religious cult, for it was a religious cult, was in itself not evil, but it was based not on spiritual things, but rather on material things. And it was linked up with various gods, which in themselves had no existence, but only in the imagination of the peoples of the time. It was a ritualistic cult, and by no means, I would say, spiritual as such. It had no spiritual significance. Indeed, it was an extraordinary cult, and although we were, to some extent, friendly, we had no dealings, we had no connections. I would not like you to be confused in this, because that which we were interested in was purely of the spiritual nature of the highest possible means.
Yes.
We were not concerned with this cult which consisted of certain sexual orgies.
Okay.
And certainly would not have appealed to you because you yourself were very much antagonistic towards these sort of things. In fact, as I told you before, you had very much turned your back upon physical love and upon the possibility of marriage. Those were many who sought your hand, and many endeavored to make you their wife. You were too devoted. Your whole being and your whole love was purely on the mental and spiritual plane. It was not that you were cold or frigid in your nature. Indeed, you were far from frigid or cold. You were very warm in your heart, and you were indeed most considerate of others, most friendly, and indeed you had a fine sense of humour, and indeed in many respects you were most tolerant, most patient, and most loving and most considerate to all peoples, particularly those near and dear to you and your brother, of course, more than any other, but you had no interest in the physical aspect of love. And therefore, this cult that existed in what you have termed, what has since been termed, the House of Mysteries, was definitely a cult that was based on physical rather than spiritual things.
Yes.
It was an initiation, actually, as you know, pointing into this, because it can certainly have no bearing on our story, and it certainly can have no effect on you or on what we're trying to do. I merely mention it because there is this sort of slight sort of suspicion in the minds of some of you that this could have been a house in which we had our meetings. And I can only say that, as I told you in the first instance,
yes,
that much that went on in polite society or among peoples of reputation and position was very much on the surface. There was a facade that always had to be kept up. In other words, one to some extent had to pretend to be interested in many cults and the worshipping of many gods, merely out of politeness. It was considered an impolite thing, for instance, if you went to the house of a neighbour who perhaps may have worshipped a particular god, they would have their separate altar and their separate niche, and it would have been considered the most rude and the most unpleasant thing to ignore that particular person or family's particular god. In other words, one would be taught to respect expect all the various cards. Of course, there again, fundamentally, this was a sort of fear. There's always this possibility in one's mind that perhaps the other person, or the other family, or the other group of individuals' God may have been the right one, and also the wrong one. People were worshipping in those days all manner of gods. All manner of sacrifices were made at various temples to various gods, and even it was one of the things that one did almost automatically, that one was almost, you might say, brought up to accept, that one must always respect not only the family and the members of the family, but one would respect the gods of the family. And so one naturally did, one sort of made obeisance, and one perhaps would even give an offering, or perhaps one would make some tribute. And particularly at the death of a member of a family, when the funeral procession would take place, and the body would be taken to the high altar of a particular temple, members of many families and many friends would gather, and they too would enter into the ceremony, though they might not have any respect or regard for that particular god or accept it at all. They would, to all outward appearances, make their obeisance and pay their respect. And at a funeral, when such things took place, all manners of people followed, respecting even the dead who accepted, or had accepted in life, a particular god, or taken a particular god to their heart or to their house. And so it was that when one went, for instance, to a place such as the House of Mysteries, there again I should explain that certain things that went on in the House of Mysteries were completely unknown to the vast majority of people. They had what I suppose you'd term secret meetings. The initiation was a very secret and a very strong religious thing to these people, and only the very closest of friends and peoples who were sincerely interested would be allowed to enter into and to know anything about these things. But, and then again, you see, when I say that you knew the people concerned, that is the owner of the house, and you knew certain things in regard to what went on, it was because, partly your position, secondly because the owner of the house had great regard and affection for you, and was very desirous that you should enter into this cult, and indeed your brother was most adamant that you should not, and in any case you had no inclination, and you broke off the association and the friendship. When I say you broke off the association, what I meant by that was that you ceased to go there. Actually it caused a certain amount of friction because the owner of the house felt piqued. At the same time, in any case, at the same time, it was drawing to the end of your visits to Bombay, so a very awkward situation which could have arisen didn't necessarily develop. And in any case, very soon afterwards, as you know, the city was buried in the eruption. But your house was not very far from this house, and indeed, it was but a short walk. And I say that it is possible, most likely, that this house, which once you owned, which was really not such a large house, but sufficient for a house which one would use for part of the summer, was adequate and suitable, and was almost opposite, at least not far from this house that has since been unearthed. And I think it's more likely it will come to light. And in that house, there are wall paintings, and one painting in particular which was done yourself, and also a figure which I should imagine once it is reopened will be found. I mention this merely in passing, not because perhaps it has any very particular interest, but merely from the point of view that should this happen in the next few years, that they shall unearth this place, that you would be extremely surprised, in a sense of delightness. Now, I'm not suggesting that in that day and age that you look writing to now, because we are talking of you when you were a young woman in your early 20s, and the resemblance physically doesn't in a sense exist. But what you will be surprised at is, there is in the appearance something that will strike you as being most extraordinary. Because if you can imagine your association with your brother, and knowing that your brother in a later age became Frederic Chopin, in other words, if you can imagine Frederic Chopin and yourself as being similar in face, then this statue, this figure, and this painting are very, very like what you know, the face of your Frederic Chopin.
Good gracious. That's very interesting.
I mention this because I think it is the most interesting point, because I feel that this is something which can well happen very shortly. Because a certain amount of research is going on, a certain amount of excavation, and I feel sure that this particular bust, this head,
yes,
will be unearthed. And the most extraordinary thing about it is that the likeness between yourself in that age and time, and this bust in particular, and to what you know of the resemblance on the face of Chopin is very, very similar. There is the same rather prominent nose, slightly hooked. There is the forehead and the chin. The resemblance is extraordinary.
Oh, I'm very glad you told me this, Mr. Lewis. You don't...
The extraordinary thing is,
yes,
that your brother in this time, Pompey, as yes, I speak, was not so like facially Frederic Chopin, that you were very like Frederic Chopin in looks when he was a very young man.
Could you explain to me? I don't know if I should ask you questions about...
Why not?
Could you explain to me why it should be like that?
I do not know quite how I can explain why it should be like this. But I've tried desperately to give to you the realization that these links, which are so strong between yourself and he whom you know as Chopin, are so far back in time. You have been so closely entwined. What I think is perhaps the most extraordinary thing is that this tremendous love that you have for your brother, which is an all-possessive love, in some strange way you took upon yourself. And I think people are unconscious of this fact, that when there is an intensity of love in the stages of evolution or growing up, shall we say, from childhood, the physical resemblance becomes extraordinary. I do not suggest, of course, that necessarily in every age that one is identical in face and figure and form with another, because, for instance, your physical body today is totally dissimilar to the time of the body that you possessed when in ancient Rome and Pompeii. But I do feel that in some strange way, without being conscious of this in any sense or shape or form, the spiritual power within you, which began to manifest itself, as I've already told you, was such that you were able to foresee. And I think this is where the fear came in with your brother, because in your unfoldment and the development that was taking place, and which Pharos was most interested, most concerned, was the fact that you did perceive, you could foresee a head in time. And I'm convinced that if you'd have continued in that age, your development and unfoldment, you would have been able to have foreseen future ages, which is a very rare thing. I mean, there are very few seers, very few prophets, that can see into future times, extend perhaps to several hundred years, and see an age in a people's yet unborn. But then again, in regard to yourself, I think that facially, you were more like Frederick Chopin then, as a young man, than your brother at that time was, although he was, in a sense, of course, Frederick Chopin in development, that is, in time itself. I mean, you must remember that these bodies are merely the cases which we inhabit for a time, and they only respond to some extent to the spirit that is within. The point is that there's no doubt about it that if you could hold up a bust of the young Frederick Chopin and a bust of yourself as you were in that age and time, apart possibly from the style of the hair, certainly the profile is identical.
Extraordinary.
You see, I think it is that even in that age, you began to have the gleanings of the future. You began to see in yourself and in your brother a similarity. There was a response from him to you and from you to him. There was a tying, as it were, of two souls as one. Though your brother married and had children and lived a normal, natural existence, there was something which you meant to him that no woman could have met, not even his own wife. You see, we must try if we can to dissociate ourselves to some extent from bodies. Bodies are important to us inasmuch that they are the vehicles of our experience while on earth. But what is important is this power of the spirit, which is so dynamic, which nothing can destroy, nothing can really affect. Though there may be times when the spirit seems dulled and held in check, once it is released from the body, nothing can hold it, and it only returns to the body for some special reason, either some lessons yet to be learnt, or for some specific work that has yet to be done. The same as I sincerely believe that you are in this present incarnation to fulfill certain tasks, and when they are completed and finished, then you will become attuned once more, not only with Frederick and Chopin, as you call him, but with many other souls who are members of our group, who have grown together and developed accordingly through many ages and many times. I mention chiefly at this present moment these links with ancient Pompeii and Rome, because not only are they possibly one of the most interesting of your incarnations and our links together, but also because I feel that they are that age, in a sense, is a stepping stone to things which I have to tell you in the future. If I seem to travel backwards and forwards, when I talk of Atlantis and I talk of ancient Assyria, which is not particularly of an age that I'm greatly interested in, possibly because of my own self in it, and because in some senses I desire to forget it, but I mention it because you are in no age even linked. And also he, whom we call Frederick, also had a time and a place, but only a short existence, very short existence indeed. In fact, he was born but did not live. But this, I'm perhaps can tell you more about, although I don't think it can benefit you very much. Many incarnations.
What if
though there may be perhaps 500 or 600 years elapsed before one is born again, there are occasions when the physical resemblance is extraordinary. It's so extraordinary that it is as if you are looking at yourself in a mirror, but dressed in different clothes and surrounded perhaps by different furnishings. It's as if you were looking into a mirror in a room and see there yourself, not only as you are then, but as you were centuries previously. Particularly, I think, in this incarnation, of ancient Pompeii, the reflection of Chopin was more in you than in your brother, although he himself was Chopin, though yet not come to Chopin. He was a soul who was in a state of evolution. I sometimes feel, as I told you in the past, there is so much that I must tell you and have to tell you, that I feel so fear that you will not be able to understand it or comprehend it.
Oh, I will, because these tape recorders are very, very useful things, you know. If I keep on listening, I can take things in gradually, you see. Don't you think so?
Yes, child.
It's wonderful to hear all this. It's most fascinating and interesting.
Yes? The power weakens, child.
Oh, yes. All right, thank you, Lucillus, very, very much.
I will. Next time,
yes.
Having more.
Yes.
I will do it.
Bless you, wife.
It's impossible to speak further. My peace and my blessings be with you, child.
Thank you,
I
again.
Will answer.
Yes.
Any questions that it is in my power to answer, should you ask.
Yes.
Any point, anything that puzzles you.
Yes.
Anything that causes you any concern.
Yes.
Speak unto me, and if it is possible.
Oh, there's nothing.
Clarify.
Yes.
There are many things that I may find difficulty in speaking to you about. Certain pets.
Yes.
Things which have been lost in time and memory is dimmed, but what I can recapture, what I can for you discover, this I should do, my child. Be of good heart in all these things. My peace and blessing be unto you, and to you too, my son.
Thank you.
Farewell.
Farewell.